Hello and welcome to the Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of pals get together to talk about anime. The pals are Arturo.
Hello everyone.
And Gauze.
Hello.
And I am your host, Ace. In today's episode, we're talking about hashtag Compass 2.0 Sentai Setsuri Kaiseki System, a series that's only a handful of episodes in. Since this is based on a video game, we've decided to cover it using the three-episode rule. Like previous podcasts about new shows, the synopsis won't be as detailed, so do check out the anime if we've piqued your interest.
Yay, anime!
You shouldn't watch anime, it's bad for you. It was animated by Lay Deuce, the studio behind Tomo-chan is a Girl and the two Fate Grand Order movies. And not much else, like a few things, but nothing notable. Compass 2.0 has a average score of 46% on Annualist.
God, that just sounds so horrible to my ears.
The game, hashtag Compass Combat Providence Analysis System, is a battle arena game which originally released in 2016 on iOS and Android, but it hasn't come west yet, and at this point probably won't. This is technically the second anime it's had, as there was a 10-episode original net animation with episodes of a few minutes each. My short synopsis for these three episodes is Compass stands for Combat Providence Analysis System, because acronyms work however the hell you want them to. Arturo, what do you have?
A virus infiltrates hashtag Compass as a new player joins forces with an unwitting hero.
And goes?
A robot forces heroes to constantly fight each other, but a hero called 13 does not want to.
The first episode opens on a login sequence where Astrobot's sister welcomes us to Sword Art Online.
Wait a minute.
I'm being reductive, comedic effect. In fact, the robot tells us the game is full of people discussing philosophy by fighting each other. We see a bit of an arena battle, and one of the characters is concerned when they see noise. That's with a capital N, so you know it's bad. In my notes, it's capital N. In the anime, it's not.
It's called artifacting.
The robot then introduces us to Qualia Tower, the center of Compass, with the Combat Providence Analysis System cube, which controls the game, floating above it. We then go back to the arena combat, where Red Team loses the match. A character from each team then sees what I assumed to be a holographic representation of the player. The robot then finishes giving the tour to a player named Jin, and my assumption was proven correct, as we see his hologram. Jin wants to partner with a hero named 13, but the robot explains it's not possible, as the cube didn't assign 13 to this game. His arrival was different.
This never comes up again.
It's impossible, because 13 is underage.
13 actually appeared twice during the tour, I just didn't mention him in my notes. But we do cut to 13 in a diner, where the others are trying to convince him to participate in fights, because if he keeps refusing, he'll be banished from Compass and die, because he doesn't have anywhere else to go. A battle request comes through, and a spacesuited hero accepts, then drags 13 with him to participate. Also in the battle is the robot, who Jin has temporarily partnered with. Unfortunately, their team loses, partially because 13 gets obliterated by spacesuit.
Which, I'm sorry, but at this point, I thought they were in the same team. The spacesuit guy was just like, you're coming with me, and I'm going to beat the shit out of you.
I think they were on the same team. I think he was just like, nope, you die.
You're too lazy. Play a kill.
You either take this seriously or I'm killing you.
I think that's how I was recruited to this podcast.
The robot congratulates Jin on playing well despite the loss and then flies off. Nearby, Spacesuit is lecturing 13 as Jin watches before Jin goes to watch a concert. Above the Qualia Tower, a big noise appears. It's like a dimensional tear. And lots of purple orbs exit, accompanied by a black robot.
Don't forget it's noise with a capital N.
The tutorial robot calls them bug balls and bug doll, and then sends out a general alert to all the heroes. The bug doll discovers a weak point in the hero's defense as they fight back on the cube, Jeanne d'Arc, who was on the two losing teams that we'd seen. I hadn't mentioned it before because it's mainly just, hey, check out Jean's wreck.
I was wondering if that's going to come up. Check out the Jean d'Arc on those racks.
She gets knocked off of the cube while Tutorial Robot is trying to find anyone willing to register as partner for 13, but she refuses to give up. She's about to be blasted once more, and then 13 tackles her out of the way, which unlocks a memory in the nearby Jin, who is trying to decide if he should accept the partner request. Like, no one wants to partner with 13.
I mean, I want to mention something about 13's design. So his skin is gray. He has, like, visible abs that are also gray. And his pants are also gray. So it looks like he's wearing no pants.
How do you know he's wearing pants?
I mean, if you look closely, the shade of gray of his skin and the shade of gray of his clothes is slightly different. But
he's tanned slightly.
But if you don't look closely, it just looks like he has no pants, like he's a sex pervert and also a Kendall.
I like how you say that, but that's exactly his personality.
Yeah, it is. Kind of is.
I'm not sure if this is fair to label him as a sex pervert, because there's also a character that's a background hero that's also a sex pervert, the one with a staff that yells love, 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 love.
It can be multiple sex perverts, of course.
Yeah, but like if you label two characters as a sex pervert, then like it gets confusing. Like we should assign one trope to one character to identify them.
We could just say sex pervert 13 and the other sex pervert. Because
what happened to the other 12 sex perverts?
I don't think we ever get the other guy's name.
I guess the pizza guy is also kind of a sex pervert.
And the guy that grabbed Jean d'Arc.
Anyway, Jin accepts the partner request, and the pair manage to send the bugs back where they came from. Unfortunately for 13, the partnership cannot be dissolved afterwards, meaning he's stuck having to deal with Jin. But inside the cube, a virus seems to be at work. Dun dun dun. Then we get the credits with a decent song.
Oh, I want to mention another thing. During the fight with the black robots, it's like, yeah, the white robot is like calling all heroes to help. But like on the ground, there is happening this concert, apparently the two idols are heroes, but also the audience is full of people who are probably heroes.
We only know for a fact that one of them is a hero.
Yeah, which makes me think that more of them might be. I don't know. Who are those other people? NPCs?
There were a lot of them.
It's like, they got this. The 10 guys up in the air, they probably got this. Let's enjoy the concert.
Episode 2 opens on 13 asking someone for help getting out of the partnership. Things escalate quickly because the mad scientist he's asking for help keeps messing with the other heroes' weapons and they want revenge. We get the titles, which is the end credits from the previous episode.
Not confusing at all.
And then turns out that the mad scientist can't actually help, so 13 drops them from the top of a building and into a fountain.
Which confused me because I thought everyone can fly.
I think it's just him and a few others.
It's just him. The one person that can fly everywhere, anytime he wants. He doesn't give a fuck about fighting.
13 is just blessed with the Moon Knight, blessing.
It's like
random
if
bullshit go.
It's like if it's like if Superman was Deadpool. If Superman had Deadpool's personality, it's like we're fucked. the one guy that can do anything. He doesn't give a fuck about anything.
I'd read that. As Compass power is down due to the attack, Tutorial Robot, I still hadn't caught the name, decides to push the battles on people, which will help restore power.
Fight, my puppets! Fight! Fight each other!
Jin receives the request and is suddenly accosted by the Ninja News anchor wanting an interview. This ends with the pair in the diner, where Jin asks each of the present characters for their backstory. Since I didn't catch or we weren't told their names, I won't detail them there. However, I did catch the tutorial robot's name, Voidal. Oh, and the owner of the diner's name is Pierre the Ikasa Man.
Oh no, I knew this was going to happen.
Manige. Facinetti, La La La, Lovely Aura, Dragon Actor, Hideyoshi, Maximilian, Coliveri, Bjorlund, Mochi Mochi, Mario Game, Margarita, Wilfred Punit, Punitowski, the 77th.
He's Polish?
Yes, that's why he makes pizzas, I assume.
I forgot the seventh name. Can you remind me?
They credit him with inventing Margarita Pizza, which is weird. I'm curious about, like, actual history of pizza now. Like, did they start with pizza with toppings? And then someone was like, why don't we just remove the toppings? And they were like, yeah, dude! You invented the best pizza!
Jin winds up going to the arcade to look for 13, and then from there to the gym, and then the lake, and finally the fountain. Things happen at each of these locations. I did not detail them here. Watch the anime. Though I did write in my notes, poor orange hoodie cat boy.
yeah, that checks out.
Because he's at the fountain, looking at the photo he took of these idols, and then the mad scientist plunges into the fountain, soaks him. He's still sat there with a hairdryer drying out his phone. And the instant it dries out...
Well, you're supposed to put your phone into a box of rice.
Clearly they don't have rice, they only have margarita pizzas and hairdryers.
Then put your phone into a margarita pizza.
Then it won't be a margarita pizza anymore.
But the phone will probably dry out faster.
They find 13 and he's clearly been attacked by the messed up weapons from the cold open, which I thought was hilarious at the time, and it gets filled in as we go, so I really enjoyed that scene, I'll be honest. I say they, but I didn't even mention that Jeanne d'Arc and her player, user, were partner, was also there. But yeah, they all get into a battle at 13's suggestion. Though he clearly has ulterior motives. We get flashbacks of 13 indeed visiting all of the places that Jin went to look for him, but he went after Jin got there, so he just missed him. Nobody he met knew how to dissolve the partnership, but someone offered to tell him what they knew if 13 could beat them in a battle. Hence, that's why they're doing the battle. The battle goes well, but Jin's team ultimately loses. However, true to their word, the person who said, beat me in battle, was beaten, so he tells 13 what he knows. He knows nothing. And this was done in front of Jin. By the way, the thing, how to dissolve the partnership, I don't know.
Yeah, you know that thing? Yeah. Oh, by the way, here's how you can get some divorce papers while you're with your You just know he did it on purpose, too. There's no way.
Yeah. Later, Spacesuit is lecturing 13 again when suddenly some noise eats him, turning him dark. And then the episode ends.
That sounds like weird, like a weird metaphor. Some noise eats him.
The third episode picks up right where the second left off, with Spacesuit attacking 13. No, you cannot give me his name 40 times in the opening 1 minute of episode 3 and expect me to change my notes. Jeanne d'Arc turns up and helps fight off Spacesuit before he steps into some noise to escape. And then we get the titles.
This noise is starting to sound like you can just do anything with it. Holy moly. Turns you darker, lets you escape.
When we come back, 13 and Jeanne d'Arc are reporting to Voidbot what happened. Voidbot explains that Spacesuit has been sent back to his original world, and Voidbot is unable to bring him back. However, 13 has a way of visiting other worlds, so Voidbot asks 13 to do it, but he can't do it without Jin. Speaking of, Jin is logged into the game, watching old Ninja News interviews with 13, and I couldn't help notice that 13 had his scythe. It was heavily implied, if not outright stated, in the first episode that he didn't have his scythe because he didn't have a partner and Voidbot had taken it off of him.
Yeah, I noticed the same thing, because that's exactly why he was throwing a fit in a tantrum also, because he's like, I didn't want to fight without my scythe, but if he had his scythe, why didn't he start fighting? So, you know.
It must have been a while ago. That's what I assumed.
No, I would like to note here that I just found it kind of funny that Jin has been partnered up with 13 for like minus 2 seconds, and then they had a breakup, and it's just dramatically watching all of the interviews with 13.
Like rewatching the wedding video for after a divorce.
Because your friend told you in front of the person not to get divorced.
We were so happy back then.
When we didn't know each other.
Before I started playing this game, Spacesuit's partner finds Jin and convinces him to help. So 13 and Jeanne d'Arc wind up going with their partners through a portal to Spacesuit's world, and then they split up to search for him. Jin and 13 are accosted by the mama of a bar, and she asks why they want to find Spacesuit. Turns out she used to work with Spacesuit, and more than that, she has him in her back room, still unconscious, as he was when she found him in the street. However, he stirs, and when 13 touches him, there's an explosion of energy, and Spacesuit attacks.
Oh no.
Spacesuit escapes, and Jeanne d'Arc spots him, giving chase. As the pair catch Spacesuit, he powers up and attacks. And they, blah, 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 beat the virus out of him and return to Compass. It's just a big fight scene most of this episode. 13 and Jin decide to keep being partners, temporarily, and the episode ends.
They really need couples therapy.
So was this a good adaptation?
Okay, so starting off, I usually try not to learn anything about the game until after I've watched the anime. But I was watching this and I was like, this is suspiciously a lot like a MOBA. I went to check it out and it was. So, plus points. And otherwise, it's good. I feel like the capturing of the keys is a bit quick and it's not done by, like, who gets there first because it has a channel time. So, that entire scene where 13 loses the fight with Jin because the other guy dashed to it was bullcrap. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, it has the same characters. The only difference is that the player character doesn't appear, and it they're not like that cute little avatar. But otherwise, you play cards just like in the other one too.
I thought that the human avatars were a good representation of like a third person camera, essentially. Like you float around behind the character somewhere.
Very true.
That's a really good point. And the player characters were just adorable.
Yeah, I wrote that. I don't know what the overall story of the game is, but I felt it's a good adaptation, especially since, well, as you said, they incorporated the players into it. They're not trying to extrapolate, like, this is the characters in this game are people who have their own stuff going on. It's these characters in this game have to do MOBA fights. So, based on the first three episodes, is it a Yata, Nani, or a Baka?
For me, it was a Yata. I was surprised that I enjoyed it. I don't know. I'm not sure how to elaborate. Yeah, it didn't feel like a generic anime thing with weird, outlandish characters, just like mixing and matching stuff. It, I don't know, it was well executed, I think.
So, writing the synopsis for this one, I kind of found myself struggling to say anything because it's not like the plot is super well established. But outside of that, I think I liked the characters a fair bit, and I like the bits that they do, and the overarching narrative is not overly typical or annoying, and it's interesting. I'm verging onto Nani, but I'm definitely going to give this a Yata, because the fight scenes were cool, the characters are great, and I'm just not super hooked into the narrative so far.
I surprised myself by, yeah, Yata. When I saw, because I saw before watching the first episode that it was a 46% average score, I thought, oh no, this must be awful. But it really surprised me. It didn't focus on Jeanne d'Arc's wreck as much as I thought it would, especially since during the first fight we see, it's the camera seems to focus on her breasts quite a lot.
Yeah, I'm not sure why the score is so low. Is it the score from people who are familiar with the game or not familiar with the game and just judging it on its own? But yeah, I think I'm judging it like mostly from an outsider perspective, and like animation is really solid. I don't think I had any complaints with it.
My one complaint about the animation is we see that throwing the scythe in the air and jumping in front of the moon thing about 8 times.
I mean, it's kind of appropriate because it's a video game and the like special attacks don't really change. It's a trope.
Yeah, I don't think the same. It does get a little repetitive, but I like that the first few failed, so it kind of broke the monotony. And I'll say here, right, like the average score being 46 feels, it's daunting, because I can't really pinpoint why. Even watching gameplay of hashtag Compass, the game doesn't offer that much for you to nitpick about, at least the few gameplay things I got to see. Like, I don't know. The other fighting anime we've watched tend to have a lot fewer fighting scenes, a lot more unexpected nudity, and a lot less, like, cool animated fights in the way that this one was. So I don't know, I'm shocked.
Perhaps there's the people who are familiar with it have a problem with 13 as the focus character. I quite enjoyed 13 as a character, and the voice actor is really good, really pulls it off.
Yeah, I thought this, like, the jokes about him not wearing pants aside, I thought his design was interesting. It was kind of, it was a cool twist on like an edgelord Grim Reaper kind of character with like, he has the mask with like his grinning mouth, and that's basically his actual mouth that moves. It's kind of like the Deadpool thing where in the comics, like you can see his mouth move through the mask. Is that correct? Is that the correct reference?
Yes, that is correct.
And yeah, he's kind of a Deadpool kind of character, even though he looks like the Edgelord. What's the character from Overwatch? Is it just Reaper? Is he just called Reaper?
Yeah.
It's kind of an obvious twist on that character, but I think it works. And I also wanted to, I'm not sure if that's the right time to bring it up. I found, like researching this game, I found out that every single character in the game is designed by a different artist. Like, I'm not sure what the process is, but I assume the developer collabs with different artists to create each character. And like their theme song is produced by someone else. Obviously, a voice actor is different. That's standard. And also, each character has a different motion actor, which is like it's interesting because it's not like. I mean, it's a MOBA, but it's not like a singular story with a singular vision. You just collab with different creatives and let them inject their own ideas into your game. And it kind of shows in the anime too with how like the characters aren't just different tropes by the same artist. They like you can see different kind of creative voices in each of their designs, personalities, etc. Sorry, that was a bit drawn out. Go ahead, Ace.
No, I think it's a cool thing to know. Thank you for sharing.
Oh, I was going to say it makes sense for each character to be designed by someone completely different because they. In the lore, come from a different world. So, it makes sense that they wouldn't look alike.
It's a really cool idea for a video game and by extension for the anime. Like, like a MOBA type structure for like your premise or your video game. Seems like a right medium for collaborating with people, collaborating with different creatives.
So, will you keep watching this?
Yeah, I would like to see more.
Surprisingly for me, I'm still on the same boat as well. I would definitely like to see more. And my list, I've been really pleasantly surprised with the last few anime we've watched because my watch list has tended to get a bit longer than I expected.
I think it's unlikely that I'll watch it, but I wouldn't say I'll never watch it. If it comes up on a list one day, it might tickle my fancy. Yeah, so I wouldn't say never, but not yet. And that about brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you for joining me, Arturo and Gauz.
Thank you so much for having us.
And thank you for listening to the Pals Anime Lounge. And better yet, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGrin.com, finding us on social media, or listening to the Grincast podcast. And until next time, game on.